fan. On demand. Log on to Sportsnet590.ca. Sign up to automatically receive the latest reports, features, and Fan 590 show highlights. Cut the BS. Only the truth makes this team preach. This is Brady and Walker on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
7:02, what's up? It's Brady and Walker, headed to a long weekend. This is our last show in August, no less. The Jays will have their last homestand in August of 2014, 3 against the Bronx Bombers. It starts tonight with a 7:07 start, just to reset things for the Yankees, who are far more in playoff contention and Toronto are. 7 games back in the division. Baltimore won last night 5-4 over Tampa. Yankees lost 3-2 to Detroit in Detroit. So it's the Yankees 3 back of Seattle and Detroit. Only one of Seattle and Detroit is holding a wild card spot, but they have the exact same record, each with 30 games left. Yankees 3 back, Cleveland 4 back, as they won again 3-2 at New Comiskey. And the Toronto Blue Jays are 5.5 back. Again, barring something unbelievably unprecedented in terms of a win streak or, you know, the 10 in a row they reeled off earlier this year, 9, almost 10, I should say, they're done and playing out the string. And the Yankees can put them even further in the ground with a win tonight. That said, a couple quick Jays wins, and you really put the pressure on the Yankees on Sunday. It'll be fun. Greg Brady, George Russick, 7:03, Derek Jeter in town tonight. It brings to George a whole philosophy concept about the New York Yankees, who I pointed out yesterday bordered on real irrelevance during a lot of my youth years from 82 through 95. They didn't make the playoffs, and they started developing and drafting and being better at doing that with, and everybody knows the players they brought up through the mix, Jeter, Soriano, Bernie Williams, and they were also able to, as baseball got bigger and a more expensive sport and more players became multimillionaires, they were the cream of the crop. And hey, we may never see a team win 3 straight World Series again like the Yankees did, and really a fourth. That 2001 series still jumps out at me. That Luis Gonzalez hit up the middle off, and it's Mariano Rivera blowing a save in Game 7 of a chance to win 4 straight, and all in the shadow of 9/11. And I think we all sort of, I remember pulling for the Yankees, thinking how great it would be for the city,
right?
And the idea that they've only won 1 World Series since in the last 13 years, it brings for debate, because you can look at the Yankees' contracts, George, and their payroll obligations, and you can just plain giggle. But then you also realize that when they outspend everybody, with the exception of the LA Dodgers, by as much as they outspend them, they can afford to have these financial malaprops, if you will, that you just giggle at, and you just say, who cares if they owe CC Sabathia $45 million over the next 2 years, and he may never even pitch again? They owe A-Rod. We can't forget A-Rod. $64 million over the next 3 years. I don't know how they'll get out of that. They'll try. They'll endeavor to do anything they can legally to get out of paying A-Rod. I don't see how they can get out of it.
But Greg, when you look at those contracts, and yeah, they're terrible now, but those guys helped them. And Mark Teixeira was a guy as well, banking a boatload of money.
They helped Mark Teixeira for that. I know
they helped the Yankees win a world championship. You never take that back. And you can just spend, and yeah, these contracts are terrible, but they've won world championships. And Blue Jay fans will snicker at some of these deals, but again, you can't take those championships back, and you can spend your way out of mediocrity, Greg. The Blue Jays have the capability. And I hate this small market mentality that some of the fans have. We're not a small market by any means. When the Blue Jays did win the World Series, highest payroll in baseball, albeit a different time in baseball. But Greg, if they choose to spend the money, the Blue Jays can spend their way out of this.
You could choose to spend. If the Blue Jays were to spend $200 million, would they have a better chance to be in the playoffs and contending? Of course they would.
Right.
But here's what I'd bring up with the Yankees. Here's why I think you might miss... you might misguide some folks with talking about the money here. Because let's look at the one World Series they've won in the last 14 years. That was Mark Teixeira's first year there. He's 29. Robinson Cano's 26. Melky Cabrera's 24. Nick Swisher's 28. Hideki Matsui's still cranking. He's 35. And then you got, obviously, A-Rod's 33. Jeter's 35. I mean, I can keep going. They were a lot more team in their prime now. Sabathia's 28. Burnett, 32. And they still have Mariano Rivera there. So I guess what I'm saying is, when you look at this roster now, George, who leaps off the page? They have nobody under the age of 30 that you go, a contender should endeavor to crave having that player on that team. They are doing this. These are banned outside of signing Brian McCann, who's been an utter disappointment. All their players that mean anything are pushing into their mid-30s, or they're well past that with Ichiro and Beltran and Teixeira. Teixeira's 35 now, and he can't play more than 110 games a year. Oh, well, so how do they win when they're a much older core and there is no younger new generation coming up behind to push for playing time and be effective?
Well, Tanaka as well, when he signed as well with the Yankees, if it wasn't for that injury, who knows what kind of season he would have had for them. And that could look like at the time, and it still could be a blockbuster signing for the Yankees. But Greg, you just don't know where they're going to go with this and how they're going to fix this, because they have the financial wherewithal. But they
can't do it all through free agency. Their three pitchers under the age of 30 outside of Tanaka are David Phelps, Chase Whitley, and Vidal Nuno. You're not impressed by any of those three, are you? No, probably not.
No, but you talk about development as well. And when you look at a team like the Blue Jays, they haven't developed anybody in years and years and years. And the Yankees have. But do the Yankees, can they go out there and sign a superstar Cuban on the horizon to maybe change the fortunes of the franchise? Sure they can. We just saw the Red Sox do that as well. The Chicago White Sox hit the jackpot with Jose Abreu as well. And that's the thing. I'm not saying let's spend irresponsibly, but let's sometimes open the vault a little bit. Let's do something. Let's get into that Yu Darvish sweepstakes. Let's get into that Cuban market that potentially could bear. Let's try to get a guy like Tanaka.
Even though you don't know what he's going to be. I mean, again, Masahiro Tanaka could turn into Daisuke Matsuzaka.
Right.
How do you know he won't?
You don't, but you take the risk. Cespedes as well with Oakland. They hit the jackpot with that guy. Aroldis Chapman with the Cincinnati Reds. He's been a fantastic reliever, a guy the Blue Jays were allegedly in on as well. Though in those instances as well, it's just money. You're not losing any prospects, and you're taking a chance. And I get that if you spend a lot of money, that could limit what you do moving forward. But if you're willing to spend the money and take a risk, you can sometimes hit the proverbial home run.
Here's the one thing with the Yanks, though, I'd point out before we get into the Friday morning six-pack, is they used to be able to split it between getting some guys via free agency, but also trading assets. And my thought with the Yankees is there are no more young assets the team's covered on that team to trade for, whereas the Blue Jays, we're yelling at the Blue Jays for not doing anything July 30th, or some people still are, because there are assets, and everybody knows that there are. Everybody overvalues their prospects. Ask, sit around with a few Maple Leafs fans in February, and they'll talk galore about young Tyler Bozak and now young Matt Fratton, and you're going, I'm not sure there's trade value there. But what there is for the Blue Jays is they got four guys all under the age of 25, and they're all not going to work out. Four pitchers that are better than anything the Yankees can push. And they're better than anything the Yankees have at AAA as well. And that may tell the tale to the Yankees struggling in the next few years. I think there's a comeuppance coming for the New York Yankees to some extent. I do. We'll see.
And that's probably good for the Blue Jays long term, that they're going to struggle so mightily financially that you just hope the Blue Jays can take advantage.
Yeah, you can offer them R.A. Dickey for Jacoby Ellsbury. I just don't think they're going to take that right now. 7:10, Greg Brady, George Russick at 7:20. Greg Louganis will join us, 30 years out from Los Angeles and his Olympics, and then, of course, 26 years ago, an HIV-positive diagnosis, hitting his head on the diving board at Seoul. He's got a lot of great memories of the Olympic Games from 30 years ago, and also he was very outspoken about Robin Williams a couple weeks ago. We wanted to have him on, and we will. Greg Louganis coming up about 13 minutes from now. Let's get you what you need to know on your Friday morning.
This is your Friday morning six-pack. Six things you need to start your day.
Greg, number six, the NHL on Rogers announces its full broadcast team. New analysts include Glenn Healy, Kelly Rudy, Craig Simpson, Mike Johnson, and Darren Pang. Cassie Campbell-Pascal joins the team as a reporter, and Leah Hextall as a host. Just 40 days until puck drop. Are you jacked up? And try not to sound too much like a company guy.
Yes. Yes.
I can't wait.
I'll watch every game in its entirety.
Good for you. And PVR the ones you miss.
I'll have to PVR the late ones fair bit. And that's the thing. Yeah, a radio host out in Vancouver could suggest that he will be able to see more hockey than I will be because of the late night stuff. But yeah, All-Canadian doubleheader to start at Montreal, Toronto, Vancouver, taking on the Calgary Flames on opening night.
Tony Stewart, number five, will return to Spring Cup action on Sunday night at the Atlanta Motor Speedway. That will end a three-race hiatus after he struck and killed Kevin Ward Jr. in upstate New York. Number four, round two of the FedEx Cup playoffs begins today with the Deutsche Bank Championship. No Tiger. Do you even have this on your sports radar?
It's not so much, but I would say it's, I guess it's a lead up. But the Ryder Cup's going to be a bit fascinating this year because Rory McIlroy's golfer of the year no matter what. Sergio Garcia's finished really well. There's that real, I cheer for Europe against the U.S. I know people think, hey, you live there. But I've always right. enjoyed when the Europeans kind of give it to the States as far as golf goes. And I'll be doing it again. I hope they pound the Americans.
Are you like me? You want Sergio to win a major? You're cheering
yeah,
for that guy?
I do.
It's time. It's time for him to break through.
I wanted Darren Clark to win one.
Yeah.
There's a few Europeans. I was really happy Patrick Harrington won those two back-to-back. Yeah.
Stupid Tom Watson can't go up and down and win in his 60s.
Well, that would have been, I would have liked to see that.
Incredible. Number three, the Bills get booed off the field at halftime for the second straight game. Sammy Watkins gets hurt. EJ Manuel's not good. Is Jeff Toole?
It's preseason.
Is Jeff Toole the answer, Greg Brady?
No. To no question is other than what is your name? I'm Jeff Toole asking Jeff Toole. But you know, think about who likes their, like out of 32 teams, a lot of fan bases do like their quarterback. They always worry the alternative. Yeah. There's consternation about Cutler and Rivers and Romo, but you're always like, God, it could be worse when you look at the Buffaloes, the Clevelands, you know, even right. Kansas City finally found Alex Smith, but they've been kind of wandering around looking for guys. I mean, since Joe Montana, they've made the playoffs, haven't won a game, and it takes forever sometimes. You're not as lucky as Indianapolis to get to go basically Manning to Luck and Green Bay Favre to Rodgers. When does that ever happen?
And you talk about Trent Edwards and the Ryan Fitzpatrick days, but do you think Doug Marrone possibly, you know, could be in trouble?
No,
after this season?
I feel like they're going to give him loads of rope. And at the same time, you know what, though? If Manuel falls in the face, doesn't that'll come back to right. administration above Marrone and not getting a veteran quarterback there. A Mike Vick, a Mark Sanchez, anybody to help out and be that backup.
Number two, Jeannie Bouchard and Milos Raonic move on to the U.S. Open. Does Jeannie look the same to you in this major like the other
No,
three?
She was wearing blue and white yesterday.
Pink shoes.
And so I thought she's looked all right. She's still attacking the ball, but there's still those unforced errors. They put up a stat last night. She's now 18-3 in slam matches.
Yeah.
And then 19-13 in every tournament that's not a slam. So she's really been able to elevate her game. And she's probably been if she can make the semis again, she's probably the player of the year
right.
as far as the Grand Slams go without maybe even winning one.
And Chris Evert just fawns over her. Chris Evert loves her some Jeannie Bouchard, which obviously is high praise coming from somebody like Chrissy Evert. And number one, the Blue Jays welcome the Yankees and Derek Jeter's farewell tour to the first of three at Rogers Center tonight. Are you a Derek Jeter lover or a Derek Jeter hater?
Well, I think he's great. I think he's fantastic, but I'm not feeling the, wow, he's the greatest player I've ever seen. I guess he does things, he's done things that are just so workmanlike, but there's not this dazzling, I mean, maybe it's hard to be, is it harder to be dazzling as an older shortstop than it is an outfielder?
Yeah.
Like, look at,
right.
like, we've seen plays like Jonas Cespedes has made, throwing guys out from the corner of the outfield without a hop, like on the fly, and you go, that's the most, and Puig does it.
Yeah.
And Trout does it. It's the most amazing things you've seen. Like Jim Edmonds was never the greatest ball player, but he'd always make the most incredible play. And you'd say, I'm seeing stuff in Jim Edmonds I'm not seeing in Mike Trout. In Derek Jeter, I should say. It'll be fun tonight. We'll see. I wonder if Jays fans will have a bit of a burr under their butt if there's too many Yankees fans and there's too many loud Yankees fans.
That's true.
For Jeter. We have tickets to give you.
Yeah, we do.
It's Brady and Walker's Ticket Window brought to you by The Great Blue Heron Casino. Today, tickets for Jeter's last game, Sunday, against the Yankees. Derek Jeter started off his major league career in 1995. We want to know who the Yankees shortstop was that season. He's a former Blue Jay who played the most games at shortstop the year Derek Jeter was a late season call-up back in 1995.
This is Brady and Walker on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
So it'll be the Hulkster at 8:40, WWE Hall of Famer. I wonder if it's like baseball's Hall of Fame. Did Hulk get like 97% of the votes? There's 3%. I'm not sure about that first ballot thing. Yeah, he kind of made your whole industry from 1985 forward. Mike Johnson, 8:22. By the way, congrats to John. He'll go to see the Yankees' final game here at Rogers Center Sunday.
Tight, yeah!
He'll, courtesy of the Great Blue Heron Casino. He knew Tony Fernandez was the most frequent Yankee shortstop
One more time's good. You can, yeah, sure.
Tight, yeah.
Yankee shortstop that year. Thank you, Tuco. Yeah. Tuco Salamanca, everyone. Derek Jeter played his first major league game in 1995. But Tony Fernandez, damn it. You could have a great time playing mid-90s.
Oh, yeah.
Yankee, not a Yankee.
Yeah.
It's Cecil Fielder, Ruben Sierra. Right. I mean, Denny Nitt. They had a lot of weird, just guys just stopping in for like a sandwich, basically.
Tight.
Speaking of sandwiches, Tony Fernandez, the thinnest Blue Jay of all time.
Yes.
That guy's skinny.
I know. Like, he's lost weight since his playing career. He's the opposite of what most people do. Mike Johnson, new NHL analyst and also WWE Hall of Famer. I did not, you know, you learn something. 8:22, Mike Johnson, then Christine Brennan from USA Today about this. And we'll talk about this in about 8 minutes on this new NFL domestic abuse policy. It's a personal conduct policy, but it's all a reaction to the blowback they got from giving Ray Rice only the two games. Joining us on the line now, 30 years ago, he really burst onto the scene and became an iconic legend. Two gold medals at the 84 LA Games 30 years ago, won two more in Seoul. He was actually a silver medalist when we had our Olympics in Canada in 1976 at the age of 16. He is Greg Louganis. Greg, it's great to track you down. We're really happy to have you on the show again. You've been on before and it's been great. Tell it 30 years ago, so a lot of retrospective thinking. There were a lot of, I mentioned iconic athletes, and Edwin Moses was there, and everybody discovered Mary Lou Retton, and obviously it was Carl Lewis's Olympics. Did you feel external pressure in your own country at an Olympics trying to win your first gold medal?
It was. A lot of times when you're in a foreign country, you don't understand what they're saying. so then you can kind of ignore some of the comments. But I remember on my way to the men's 10-meter platform finals, and the security guard said, "Hey, Louganis, you going to bring the gold home for us?" And I was like, oh, my God. You know, because, like, that's the last thing you want to be thinking is about results. You know, because you have to do the work, you have to perform. So it was wonderful to be in my own backyard and to be as successful as I was.
It was an unbelievably high time for Americans. Yeah, I mean, you had everyone remembers Lake Placid, and you had Eric Heiden and the Miracle on Ice, and then no summer games. Then Sarajevo wasn't terribly successful in the winter games, but I mean, the number I remember this as a young teenager. Staggering results, and now I look 174 medals, and no other country besides the U.S. had more than 59. It was amazing those 2 weeks.
Well, the Eastern Bloc countries weren't here, so it was I had the blessings of being able to compete on two sides of two boycotts, and I was in 76 Montreal, and then the boycott of 80. And then the Eastern Bloc countries boycotted 84, which a lot of the Americans forget.
Oh, at that point, it was sort of, it was very much a news story in a far more tense political climate, obviously, with that's the Cold War at its height, isn't it, really, between about 80 and 84. So, I remember it being the case, but it was also, there were performances, like I said, yours. No one ever beat Edwin Moses at the 400-meter hurdles. No one was going to beat Carl Lewis from the Eastern Bloc countries. So, yes, some of those numbers are in flow. Canada won 44 medals, and we've never come close to that since. So,
Yeah. There were some incredible performances that were put in. Evelyn Ashford, like you said, Carl Lewis and Edwin Moses, I mean, they were just incredibly dominant at that moment in time. And I broke 700 on 10-meter platform at an Olympic Games, which is really, really unusual to break a world record.
Greg Louganis is our guest on Brady and Walker. Was Seoul, so then we all know the story of Seoul and what you had to obviously persevere through and recover from. Like you said, the Soviet bloc countries came, and China was growing stronger at diving. They're obviously a world power now. Was that, and that could never mean more to you than 1984, but it was a real statement about who you were as an athlete to compete. And maybe people remember the accomplishment at Seoul in a way more than LA. I mean, can you compare the two Olympics for you?
Right. Also, you know, 6 months prior to the Olympic Games in 88, I was diagnosed with HIV. And at that time, we thought of HIV as a death sentence. And so then that was going on. And then I hit my head on the board in the prelims. And that, you know, was such an emotional, visceral response about that happening. It kind of burned that image, and people remember that. You know, but I did come back and win. So, in the finals and then in men's platform, it was a little 14-year-old boy who was, you know, I was twice his age. And, you know, he was leading going into the last dive of the men's 10-meter platform contest. And, I just edged him out barely.
Greg Louganis joining us. Some great stories on Brady and Walker. You're well renowned and so well respected for breaking a lot of barriers, being one of the first openly gay athletes. You also have talked about depression before, and we've all talked about it in the last couple weeks with the passing of Robin Williams. Do you like where we're at in our culture, I suppose, is the best way to ask it, with how we view it now as a disease, as an illness? I mean, there is the whole, you got to push through things and you got to fight and you got to, you got to put your head down and get through tough times. But we also understand now there's more, far more than 20, 25 years ago. There's far more a sense that this is something that we need to respond to and we need to treat. And we certainly need to empathize for it. It doesn't make a person tough or not tough if they're depressed or not depressed.
Yeah. I mean, depression is, you know, very real. There's still a stigma surrounding depression. And, you know, with the passing of Robin Williams, because, you know, I did meet him and, you know, we had some time together, which, you know, I'm just very grateful for. And, it just kind of reminds me to rededicate myself to, one, my own sobriety. I've been sober, coming up to 8 years now. But also recognizing that the depression, you know, I can sense when that wave of depression may be coming on, and acknowledging it and recognizing it for what it is. You can't just say, oh, come on, you know, put a smile on your face and, you know, and buck up and, you know, but when you're in it, you feel like it's this black hole and there's no escaping. But I know from the coping skills that I've learned in AA that, you know, that this too shall pass. And it usually does. And so, and the sun will come out tomorrow and it'll be a new day. And, you know, but we do need to, remove a lot of the stigma surrounding depression.
Greg Louganis, kind enough to join us. Great stuff there. 4 gold medals in the Olympics, 5 in the World Championships. So before you go, you are a relatively newly married man. It's the standard cliche question. Was it? Is marriage everything you thought it would be?
You know, it's that and more. I just never expected that. You know, to have gone through that ceremony and just looking into my husband's eyes and making that commitment, you know, and be legally married in the state of California. And, you know, it's something that I think both of our parents, none of our parents are living, but, you know, I think they're smiling from heaven, you know, because I think that was my mom's biggest concern, was that being a gay man, I would always be a second-class citizen. And so I'm sure she's smiling down from heaven.
Well, that's exciting. I'm glad to hear you say that. I had my 10th wedding anniversary this year, and it's amazing. It's a great feeling, almost second to none. Gold medals, kids, dogs, there's a lot of great things in life, but getting married is one of them. We can't thank you enough for taking some time, sharing some of those memories. Again, very, very iconic stuff from 30 years ago, and you're a great story. Thanks for doing this today.
Thank you.
It's Greg Louganis joining us on Brady and Walker. He is a great story all told. Yeah, it, pretty amazing life. George, you were just mentioning how 88 is sort of everybody in Canada, obviously, thinks Ben Johnson, where right. they were when they saw the race, where they were when they found out about the stanazol test positive. And but they also think about Greg Louganis and hitting his head on the diving board, recovering. He didn't even knock him out of the Olympics, and he still ends up winning the gold medal just to be able to psychologically get back up on the board after having it happen.
It was horrifying, and you just don't think of that happening on the diving board as well. We always laugh when we see a good belly flop on the end of the pool, but when the actual danger's there and to get severely injured, and as you mentioned, recovers back to perform at such a high level is just fantastic.
And you also think corrupt boxing judges, so that's a positive also at the end of the day.
Sure.
Coming up around 8:05, we'll get into a little bit on the Jays and Derek Jeter, but Christine Brennan will join us from USA Today. She's on Good Morning America this morning. She's on Good Morning America and on Brady and Walker. Again, which one of these things don't belong together? But we'll talk about this domestic violence edict put down by the NFL yesterday. Some are suggesting it's more a reaction to the bad PR the NFL has received. My question is, so what? That happens sometimes. I'm more impressed by a leader, by an executive, by someone in the corporate world who says, I didn't get this right. You get a boss or a leader who just, they never admit mistakes, and then one mistake leads to another, to another, to another, and then you question whether the guy's the right person for the job. This is great for Goodell to get. Now, again, if only it could have been imposed in the first place, and
right.
people would have been somehow happier with 6K. It doesn't make what Ray Rice did any less heinous, though. That's the problem.
What's wrong with common sense at the end of the day? And then, yeah, like as you mentioned, if he makes a mistake, yeah, it's maybe it's time to rectify that mistake.
But we'll ask Christine about this, because there may be a little bit of a slippery slope. There were no charges filed against Ray Rice, but we had video evidence. So what if we don't have video evidence that the world sees, over and over again on YouTube? What happens then? 7:35, that's coming up. So is John Morosi in 7 minutes at 7:42. He writes, it's an absolute failure for the Blue Jays to finish out of the playoffs. Is he right? We'll ask him how he came to that decision next on Brady and Walker.
Prices like no other, from a club like no other, the Fan Club. Log on to Sportsnet590.ca. You're listening to Brady and Walker.
Those goofy bastards are just about the best thing I've got going in this crazy world.
On Sportsnet 590, The Fan. There's something
wrong with. All right, we have a great story involving a former major leaguer, now a minor leaguer, a scout, temptation, and ice cream bars. That's all I know. Let's, Max, maybe some music. This is great. Jesus Montero. Do you remember Jesus? Do you remember Jesus Montero?
Hey, ice cream.
It is?
Yeah.
There's this old hallway?
What? Where?
Sometimes they bring booster juice in here. Booster juice is a big sponsor. Nice. Jose about to end. But sometimes there's like beer. But I've never seen an ice cream truck roll through the hallway here. Is it part of the new hockey coverage? So here's the story really quick. Jesus Montero was traded for Michael Pineda. Everyone thought, oh, my heavens, what a player this guy's going to be. And he goes to Seattle. A little lower, Max. Just a little lower, just in case. In case I start yelling. So this is a weird story. He's playing with the single-A Everett Aqua Sox, and they're playing in Boise. And the scout had been heckling. A Mariners scout had been heckling Montero. The scout then sent an ice cream. And so there were words exchanged. He then sent an ice cream sandwich to the dugout for Montero. And Montero showed up like last year. He was like 40 pounds overweight. By 40, I mean 60. And Montero snapped and had to be restrained. Tyler Mon writes for MILB.com. And according to Tyler Mon, the scout yelled at Montero to hustle harder off the field. Montero then had words with him. And then the scout ordered an ice cream sandwich and had it sent to Montero, wow. Which I didn't know you could do. Like, can I?
No, that's
with any position of could I send a ice cream bar to Jabba Chamberlain if I'm at a game,
sure.
A Tigers game of some sort?
A hot dog to Gianna Navarro. I'm sure you'd appreciate that after a tough day of catching.
Like, wouldn't you just think it was a secret admirer, or would you know it was the scout that hey, like if someone said to me, I have often been in morning environments and. Like, someone will say, here's a Krispy Kreme just sent a box. And I'm going, are you kidding? I don't want to have heart palpitations. I might go to the gym later and pretend I'm working out. So I don't want this. But if I had a secret admirer in the office and like, someone sent me, like, a Chipwich every morning.
Nice.
I'm not sure I'd be angry. I'm pretty sure I'd eat it.
What are the balls on the scout, though?
No.
To actually do that and own up to the fact that he's doing it. Does he care about his job security?
Why couldn't there have been a really fat guy on the Durham Bulls in Bull Durham? And they had a scene. Like, it's one thing to have the guy getting married, like the ultra-religious guy, and then you got a guy who needs the live chicken to take the curse off his back. But why not just a giant fat first baseman, like a Steve Balboni type, and you just keep sending him ice cream sandwiches? Seems reasonable. Maybe that was in the deleted scenes. John Morosi, MLB insider for Fox Sports. It's hit rock bottom, John, for Jesus Montero, I'm afraid, as you just heard.
Greg, I want to know who the scout was. Do we have that information?
Not as of yet, no. He might have been one of those guys from Moneyball who was yelling at Billy Bean. I don't know. That's the only thing I can think of. It's a very bitter old school. He does not subscribe to Sabermetrics. That's how bitter he is.
This is going to be my new assignment for the day.
Find
Greg.
Out.
It's going to be to figure this one out because there are a few interesting possibilities, I guess, among the Mariners scouting community as to who that could have been. But that's pretty good. I can't say that I've heard a story quite like that before.
And as you know, 98.8% of baseball beat writers, when sent an ice cream sandwich, would simply have it disappear within about 18 seconds. It would spill out on their Hawaiian shirt.
Yes, I cannot pretend to think that this is that we are perfect in our eating habits. I mean, certainly when I was in college, there was a period of time where every morning at 3 a.m. I was still up doing my homework, and I would get a Nalgene bottle full of Cherry Coke and a bagel with cream cheese, and you can only imagine what that did to my weight for a period of time.
Yeah, but you got the metabolism of like Seabiscuit. So
there are some photos of me in the later stages of college, Greg, that I hope you don't ever get hold of. So that's I'll just say that.
All right. So you wrote a column on the Blue Jays. I'll ask. Was there? I thought it was very very firm and very fair at the same fair and balanced, no less about
Thank
the Blue
you.
Jays and their expectations. And usually people do. It's understandable. Second year, top 10 payroll, and you know, potentially a 500 club, it's understandable that there's disappointment and there is that sense of failure around the team. That's not unfair.
Right. And I think, for me, Greg, it's interesting because this team had that six-game lead in June, and I think so many people thought, certainly Jays fans thought, that this really was going to be the year that they won the division. And I think part of the disappointment, a large part of it, is knowing that the opportunity was certainly there. The bottom teams of the division right now are the Rays and the Red Sox. The Yankees are having a down year as well. This division was very winnable, and even the Orioles in first place are tremendously flawed when you consider Machado out for the year, Wieters out for the year, Davis not hitting that well. Ubaldo Jimenez has four victories. So I think this, it even in a certain sense, Greg, and I didn't really mention this in the column, but I thought about this yesterday, it almost goes back to spring training with Irvin Santana not signing. It was a year that there was always a lot of hope, but that disappointment was there as well. And when you look at the big picture, you wonder, how would things have been differently if Lurie had stayed healthy, if Lind had started more than 25 games in the field? There's a lot of possibilities there, but at the end of the day, this was really, to me, a prime opportunity missed.
Is there a chance they go youth movement next year? And I ask that if Colby Rasmus departs. If they can, now they can re-sign Melky Cabrera. If they can, I think you're still in go-for-it mode, and you might even expand what you're paying people and try to get more vets that can help out. But if you can't keep Cabrera and Rasmus leaves, knowing how much they love their young pitching, knowing maybe Bautista would be an unbelievable... Now, you got to replace him in the lineup, and that's not going to be easy. And in fact, it's borderline impossible. But could they go out with a lot younger squad and say, we can't sign free agents, but we can keep trading for veterans that have a lot of time left on their contract and go it that way?
I think it's possible. I don't think it's likely at this point, Greg, but it's an interesting concept. The one problem with it, I think, at this stage of the game is if you went young, I don't know that really Reyes and Burley and Dickey would have a tremendous amount of trade value. I mean, the guys that would have trade value would be Bautista and Encarnacion. But to me, those are the guys that the fans show up to watch. I mean, I think if you trade those guys right now, that's a really tough decision. Because, again, I don't think that those few guys I mentioned with Reyes and Burley and Dickey, I don't think their trade value is very high. I think even a guy like Laurie, I mean, you got to wonder what is his future based on the fact that he has just not been able to stay healthy. So I think you keep the existing core, but all that being said, to your point, you've got a lot of work to do. You've got to find a center fielder, a left fielder, a second baseman and or third baseman. You also have to replace probably Morrow somewhere in the pitching situation, and also find a new closer and rebuild probably even one more bullpen position beyond that. There is a ton of work for this team to do. And again, I think the makings of a good team are there because there's hope, obviously, about Sanchez and Stroman, Norris. Obviously, all three at some point in time could be in the rotation next year. But this is a team where the bullpen just has to be better, and the starting pitching has to improve as well.
John Morosi, excellent stuff, FoxSports.com. So let me ask you, how in it are the Yankees 3 games back of 2 teams? How in it are the Tribe 4 games back of 2 teams? How do you evaluate both those teams' chances?
Well, I saw the Yankees this week in Detroit, and I think they've been very game in terms of staying in the race as long as they have, but they're just undermanned right now. This is a team that just does not have that same Yankee-like usual complement of talent. Obviously, their rotation, about 80% of it from opening day or the spring training, is lost for the year. You don't see that overall component of Yankee veteran savvy that you usually have. I mean, they have a lot of guys that are kind of mixing around. Headley's been solid, but there's just nobody having a really good year on that team from an offensive perspective that's carrying them right now. They're extremely streaky, and Brandon McCarthy's been a great story, but there's just I don't see them really having a great shot. The Indians, they're going to have a chance at the Tigers coming up next week, and if they're able to, and that series is in Cleveland, if they can win 3 out of 4, all of a sudden they're right in that discussion. But I just think the Yankees, for me, this week was a really, really tough loss for them yesterday. So I think they probably have to sweep the Jays and really almost run the table in a certain level here to really kind of be part of that wild card discussion.
I'll tell you, it adds to the Francona legend, doesn't it? If he can get this team in, Swisher on the DL, Murphy on the DL, Yan Gomes has had a tough time saying Masterson bad and then traded. Corey Kluber's been a great find, but I don't know how. It's amazing with the payroll and what they've lost if the Tribe can get in and even play on the road in that wild card game.
No question. And also, they traded Asdrubal Cabrera.
Yeah.
They traded him. They've gotten Zach Walters back. He's been pretty good for them. So they've hung around. Francona, I think, Greg, is one of the best managers in the game. He always gets the most out of his talent, probably even more than he should, at least in the times he's been with Cleveland. So he's been, I think, tremendous for that team, and it really would be quite a story if they could make it back to the playoffs.
Hey, John, great stuff as always. Have a great weekend. September baseball, it's just awesome. We'll talk next week.
It is. Sounds great. And we'll see if the Wolverines can beat Appalachian State tomorrow.
It's a big rematch.
Big question around here.
Yes. Many 28-year-old Michigan Wolverines will be watching that with bad memories. they'll be waking up in cold sweats Saturday morning.
No question, Greg. Hey, thanks again for having me on. Appreciate
you got
it,
bud. It's John Morosi, FoxSports.com. Real quick, just a little city politics note. This has nothing to do with the Fords, really. I saw yesterday how Toronto City Council wants to make this. Everyone's seen this, the plans for this Metrolinx, where you could go from Union Station out to the airport, right out to Pearson. And they think that, between $20 and $30 each way is too much money. And have they seen what it costs to park at Pearson? I mean, you're paying about $15 to sit there for 10 minutes.
Yeah.
I don't think this is... Would I like it to be less? Yes, but I don't think it's outrageous given you can take that Airport Express purple and yellow bus.
Yeah.
And it's $19 or so each way. What are we talking about here? To go from Union right to your terminal at Pearson? Who's not paying $25? I would understand that it costs that much. And maybe it's me.
And with all this traffic nightmare, especially with the Garner here in Toronto, why wouldn't you want to pay just to save that extra hour and a half, Greg Brady, to get to the airport?
They could charge $25. Now, it may be posturing. It's an election year. So, I mean, people, you know, city councilors are urging that they want to look like they're you know, men and women of the people, and they want to save the people. But you stick $25 each way to go from Union to Pearson, not have to worry about your car, ride in some semblance of luxury. Like anybody who's been to Europe would know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
You ride around on the trains, and it's like, where's our trains? You know, where's our North American luxurious trains to ride on? Anyway, I don't think it's unreasonable in the least.
For a commuter, it's just terrible infrastructure in this city. Just abysmal.
8 o'clock up, hot take, George. That's just abysmal.
It's abysmal.
The bacon's on the grill right now. That's sizzling. Christine Brennan at 8:06 from USA Today. Mike Johnson, 8:22. Hulk Hogan, 8:42.